You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 303 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live deep into the night on this fine Sunday into Monday. And in short, there's a lot going on this weekend in the Atlanta Hawks universe. Two basketball games to chronicle, as well as some news. We'll start with the news of the day. That these happened before the respective games on Saturday and Sunday, but still, it's probably a good jumping off point. The first one happening earlier, in that Nick Prissino was waived by the Hawks. That was not a huge surprise. We talked about that a little bit on the podcast in the last couple of weeks or so, but Prissino was the pretty obvious odd man out when it came to creating a roster spot for Tyler Cavanaugh. Michael Cunningham of the AJC reported that that seems to be the likely route, and that's something that I speculated on quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. Prissino, very, very limited time in a Hawks uniform, really did not have a huge opportunity to actually prove himself in Atlanta. At least did spend some time in Erie, had a couple of interesting and positive games, and I kind of like his skill set a little bit. He's very, very long, and if he could play some wing, that would be a positive thing. But at the same time, it seemed like Budenholzer was not exactly overly thrilled with Prissino in terms of not deploying him in some blowout situations, not really giving him he was really the only guy in the entire roster that has yet to have a chance at even once playing in the actual rotation. Even Tyler Dorsey played in the rotation earlier on in the season at least one time. And of course, Dorsey was a draft pick of the current regime. It should be said, Travis Schlenk also was the one that drove behind picking up Prissino off of waivers after he was waived by the Mavericks over the summer. With that said, he was certainly 15 out of 15 when it came to the roster, and because Tyler Cavanaugh's clock is ticking on his two-way contract, the Hawks have to have a roster spot in order to keep him around. It seems to be, at least from the outside looking in, making some assumptions here, but it seems to be a pretty obvious correlation here between Prissino being waived and the Tyler Cavanaugh experience continuing with the Hawks for the rest of the season. It has to be noted that that's not yet happened, at least publicly. We do not know that Cavanaugh's been signed for the rest of the season, and his two-way clock is still running, has not yet run out at this point, but between now and then, I would expect/hope that the Hawks would go out and sign Tyler Cavanaugh for the rest of the season. Hopefully, if you are a fan of Cavanaugh, you would want the Hawks to sign him a little bit longer than that, perhaps to a non-guaranteed contract for next year. That makes a lot of sense in terms of if you believe that he can be at least a reasonable roster player for you moving forward. You would want to lock him up beyond this season. I expect the Hawks to at least try to do that with Cavanaugh, who's been very, very good in his limited time this season. You know, it's not even been so limited now. He's been in the rotation for quite some time with the absence of Collins and Dedmon and Muscala, and Cavanaugh's earned some more time and earned that investment. So the Hawks clearly like him. Sort of the jury's still out as to whether that sort of translates in the big picture, but for now, he's been playing pretty well here, and he's earned that that roster spot, at least from the looks of it. And then we'll of course update you guys if and when that actually comes to fruition in an official sense in the coming days. The other bit of update to pass along to you guys actually hit on Sunday afternoon before the game took place, and that is Michael Cunningham of the AJC reporting that John Collins could return as early as Tuesday on the road against the Cleveland Cavaliers. With that said, Cunningham at least focuses on Collins being the more likely return date being Thursday at home against the Detroit Pistons. In fact, the quote was that he looks really good to return on that day, and that Collins played one-on-one on Sunday. I actually saw him on Saturday before the game at home doing some warm-up stuff. Looked pretty crisp to me. Of course, it's warm-ups playing one-on-none, but apparently he had some one-on-one full contact kind of thing on Sunday before the game, and there was no pain to report in the shoulder with Collins. That's kind of all you wanted to see there. The original timetable with Collins was 2 to 3 weeks. He was injured on November 30th. The report came out, the official announcement came out, on December 1st. So, Tuesday, that would be the 12th, so that's a little bit less than 2 weeks. If he came back on Thursday, it would be exactly 2 weeks after he exited and did not return and all that fun stuff. So, something to keep an eye on there. I'm all about being cautious when it comes to John Collins just because of the fact that he's the biggest centerpiece of the franchise moving forward on the current roster. You could easily argue that for sure, and he's very, very young. There's no reason to rush him along, but if he's 100% healthy, it looks like he probably will be getting towards that point by Thursday. You could see him return sooner rather than later, and that'd be a lot of fun. fun because, you know, Collins is very, very entertaining. And if nothing else, he certainly bends the defense a lot right now just because of the fact that his offensive gravity is real, and the fact that he can really sort of dominate around the glass area as well. It's very, very important for the Hawks moving forward. With that said, we can get into the two games here. Before I do that, I want to remind you guys to check out the podcast in a subscription form, whether that be on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all those fun places, Google Play. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, please check us out and subscribe. Go ahead and dial us in there so that you never miss an episode. Please tell your friends as well as checking out the rest of the Locked On Network. I would certainly encourage you guys to find another Locked On podcast or two. The network is now branching out into the baseball world. Not every single team yet for baseball, but there's a Locked On MLB show, a couple of big market teams. The Yankees have a show, for instance, you guys want to check out if you are a Yankees fan. I know there are a lot of those, even in Atlanta. I know a lot of Braves fans don't like the Yankees, but some of them do, all that fun stuff. So please subscribe to whichever shows that you are interested in, and give us a positive rating as well on those podcast platforms, especially Apple Podcasts. That's one that I personally use for my podcast, so check that out as well. Before we get to all that, let's go to the Magic game. It feels like it was a long time ago now. That's the nature of a weekend, is that, you know, the Hawks played a back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday, and the Magic game was the more favorable outcome. The Hawks won that game by a final score of 117-110 in front of a snowy and blustery crowd at Phillips Arena. It was intense for this one. It was a lot of fun, especially later on in this game. We got very, very interesting down the stretch. For me, it was the Ersan Ilyasova show. I wrote about this game a little bit on Sunday. That was my biggest focus. Ilyasova finished this game with... Let's just sort of dive into the starting lineup here. It's just sort of as a nice bridge, because Ilyasova, 26 points on 9 of 9 from the floor, 5 of 5 from 3, and 3 of 5 from the line. At one point, he was completely perfect. He did end up missing two free throws down the stretch. He actually was 2 of 4 in his last four, but from the field was flawless, was a plus 11, and he was the biggest story of the game as a result of that. He played incredibly well, but Budenholzer praised his defense as well. You know, it's something that's not exactly easy to find, because, you know, Nick Vucevic for the Magic had a huge game. He actually ended up with 31 points, 13 rebounds, and 10 assists for his first career triple-double, but that's not exactly on Ilyasova. He was quite good in this game, and he was the biggest story for me. Elsewhere, Taurean Prince had a very, very good game that I wrote about, sort of under the radar a little bit. 10 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists for Taurean. He caught a lot of praise from Budenholzer after the game, specifically for his defensive intensity and the way that he was able to sort of create some chaos on that end of the floor. That was impressive to me, and that Prince has been sort of criticized by me and others recently for his defensive effort and his defensive performance overall this season. That was not the case here at all. There were a couple of moments early on. There was one where he was beat backdoor by Jonathan Simmons for a dunk in the first quarter. I believe it was the first quarter, definitely in the first half of this game. But aside from that, you know, he's very, very good defensively and offensively, very efficient. Only 8 shot attempts, but was good there, and had 3 block shots, including really three highlight reel block shots. It's not all about the highlight when you're talking about defense with Prince, for sure. It's about more of a attentiveness and that kind of stuff. But in short, he was very, very good here. That's a very encouraging development for the Hawks. The other guy who was very good here was Kent Bazemore against the Orlando Magic on Saturday. 19 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, and 3 steals and a block for Bazemore in 27 minutes. He was 7 of 12 from the field, 3 of 6 from the line, 2 of 2 from 3. From the free throw line, I should say. And Bazemore, the two free throws that he knocked down were down the stretch here in the final minute of the game. In fact, he had two sort of pick sixes in terms of a steal that ended up in a dunk that were momentum shifting plays. Ended up basically sealing the game down the stretch of this contest for Bazemore. It was not all about Bazemore necessarily in the final moments, but he made the biggest plays of the game by far. You know, he played well before that as well, but that, you know, he sort of left his mark on the game with the three biggest plays of the contest down the stretch, and Baze was quite good here. Elsewhere on the starting lineup, Miles Plumlee had a really, really rough first half stint. He was a little bit better after that, I will say. You know, 3 points, 3 rebounds, 2 steals. He was sort of invisible for the most part after a couple of hiccups early on. 16 minutes of play, that's kind of what he's going to be most nights. Dennis Schroeder, 35 minutes to lead everybody on the Hawks roster. Still, he had 18 points and 7 assists and 2 steals. We'll talk about him even more when it comes to the Sunday game. But Dennis was okay, I thought, against Orlando. You know, defensively had some some positive moments against Elfrid Payton. He was actually more locked in than he has been in terms of a general rule. Defensively, I thought it was one of his better performances on that end of the floor. Offensively, not very efficient, though. 19 attempts to get to 18 points is not what you want to see from Dennis, but he's allowed to have a bad shooting night every once in a while. I actually thought he played a little bit better here than his overall performance would indicate, which is usually the inverse of what Dennis produces. It's normally some empty stats with Dennis. He still had a solid stacked game in terms of just raw production with 18 points and 7 assists. But I thought he actually played better than that, and that's something to certainly note because it's not usually the case when it comes to Schroeder. On the bench here, we'll talk about a couple of guys specifically. Tyler Cavanaugh, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, and 4 fouls in 27 minutes. He had 3 three-pointers. He played extremely well. I mentioned him early on the podcast, of course, with the assumption, at least in my opinion, that he'll be getting that final roster spot. He was very good in this game. Marco Bellinelli also had some positive moments, had this great stretch in the second half, in which he basically made 2 threes over the course of about 20 seconds. That was a huge momentum shift, and Budenholzer referenced that after the game as well as a huge moment in the contest. 13 points, basically just a typical Bellinelli good game in terms of what you would expect him to bring to the table. And the Hawks needed every bit of that. Isaiah Taylor was the backup point guard in this game. 6 points, no assists, but 12 minutes. He was actually pretty good here defensively as well. Had some good energy. DeAndre Bembry, 8 points and 6 assists. And obviously, it seems like he took all the assists off the bench. 23 minutes for Bembry. Made his only 3-point attempt, which is what you definitely want to see from him. Luke Babbitt, a pretty quiet night. No points. Did have 8 rebounds, though, and just did some good veteran things, as you expect him to do. 16 minutes of play. DNPs from Malcolm Delaney and Tyler Dorsey as not necessarily a shock there, but as a whole, the Hawks shot 17 of 33 from 3 in this contest. That was the biggest reason why they were able to get this win in a big picture sense. Also, 51% from the floor. Defensively, they had some issues. Allowed a 118 offensive rating for the Magic. A lot of that was Vucevic, as I mentioned before, and Jonathan Simmons had a huge game with 29 points and 7 rebounds for the Magic. It was basically just a two-man show. Those guys combined for 60 of the 110 for Orlando, and the rest of the team was pretty much held in check. Offensively, though, the Hawks were great in this game. 125 offensive rating was a very slow-paced contest, so 117 is actually even a little bit better than you would expect, and Atlanta played very, very well offensively. One of the better offensive games of the season, 33 assists as well. Orlando playing without Aaron Gordon and playing without Evan Fournier, a couple other guys. Expect them to be a little bit overmatched. The Hawks were actually favored in this game by 4.5 points in Las Vegas, so not a huge surprise they were able to go get this win, but it was a highlight-filled game. It was an entertaining game down the stretch and one that will be remembered for a little while here as one of those rare times when the Hawks were really clicking on the offensive end of the floor, and that's usually more fun than when it's a defensive-based performance. With that said, we can get into the Sunday game. A little bit less favorable result, a 111-107 final at the hands of the New York Knicks. A back-and-forth contest, to be sure. The Hawks were trailing by a 103-94 margin down the stretch. Ended up making this a lot closer than that with a late rally, but just could not execute necessarily down the stretch. Kent Bazemore had a pretty hilarious, intentionally missed free throw when the Hawks were down late in this game. He'll want that one back for sure. That ended up being on Shaqt and the Fool on TNT, a couple of other places. He was made fun of quite a bit on the internet. No shade at Baze there. It's a tough job to miss a free throw in that way, but it was a pretty embarrassing effort. In that one instance for Bazemore, a little bit of a lighthearted moment in terms of a loss performance. The biggest headliner, though, in the entire game, honestly, was the fact that Dennis Schroeder did not play for the final 8:14 of this contest. Only 22 minutes overall. That's a little bit misleading because a lot of that was foul trouble. Dennis had 4 fouls and had 3 in the first half, was really benched a couple of times in the first half for foul trouble. So the overall minute total of 22 is not that significant, but the fact that he never returned from the 8:14 mark on is certainly the headliner here. And Budenholzer, after the game, was asked about this, as you might expect, and this is what he had to say to Andre Aldridge. And this was a broadcast on the Fox Sports Southeast platform, so this is where I got this audio from.
Yeah, no, the group out there, Isaiah, I thought gave us a big lift. Malcolm came in the first half, gave us a big lift. So, just a coach's decision.
If you follow White Budenholzer at all, it was not a big surprise that he would label this as a coach's decision. That doesn't really give you a whole lot of insight into what transpired. A couple of theories that are floating out there, one of which I want to shoot down immediately. Most of this was probably joking, but there was a lot of this on Twitter that talked about how this is a tanking move to bench Dennis Schroeder. That is absolutely not the case. You guys, I'm sure if you listen to this podcast long enough, know that I'm not the not necessarily a straight PR arm for the Hawks. It's one of those things where I'm happy to criticize the team when things don't go well or if players not playing well, et cetera, et cetera. But I will throw my body in front of this one in a hurry. coaches and players don't tank. That's something I've said before on this podcast, something I'm going to reiterate now. Budenholzer is not going to be sitting a guy in order to try to lose a basketball game. That's just never going to happen. These guys are trying to win games every single night, and the roster is not exactly set up for success. That's a front office decision, not a player/coach decision, and that's sort of the end of that. Elsewhere, the actual explanations that I would put forth for you would be defensively, Schroeder was very bad in this game. He was lit up by Jarrett Jack. Yes, that Jarrett Jack at the different points of this contest defensively. I know Dennis's numbers look good. He had 21 points and 3 assists in 22 minutes. He was efficient. He was +5 when he's on the floor. I get all of that. What I will say, though, is that going to Isaiah Taylor in the fourth quarter, and then actually there was a period of time where they were going without a point guard at all and played DeAndre Bembry at point guard essentially defensively, and that's all defense first, I would imagine. So if Bud was given some true serum, I'm sure some of this could have been to send a message to Schroeder. At the same time, you could defend it in just saying that Dennis's defense was not up to par. That's not a new development, obviously, if you listen to this podcast recently, is that we talk about this kind of all the time with Dennis's defense, but it was particularly bad here. I mentioned earlier, it was a little better, I thought, on Saturday, but it definitely regressed here against the Knicks. And, that's probably the easiest example and the easiest explanation for why he was benched here. But it's certainly noteworthy. We'll follow this in the future, to be sure. But, Bud's answer, you can hear there, he talked about playing Malcolm Delaney, which we'll talk about here in a second, as he made an appearance here that was probably motivated originally by foul trouble from Schroeder, but he didn't actually come back in the second half as well. We'll talk about that. But, this is not a taking maneuver, and there's probably a message being sent to Schroeder. That's my assumption, but defensively, that had to be probably the reason why this took place. Elsewhere in the contest, the Hawks, throughout this game, sort of a back-and-forth battle. For the most part, they were in decent shape here. There was a 9-0 run for the Knicks at the end of the third quarter into the early part of the fourth quarter that actually swung this game in their favor. And from that point forward, it was New York more in the driver's seat than Atlanta. But again, in the first half, the Hawks actually hung around, especially in the first quarter, despite some poor shooting. But the second quarter, the team kind of put everything together, had a very good performance that included a nice 9-2 run to end the half that ended up including threes from Luke Babbitt and Ursula Nesova in the final seconds, and the Hawks were in the lead at halftime as a result of that play. Ilyasova continued his hot shooting, 20 points on 7 of 11 from the floor, 5 of 6 from three. So a night after being 5 of 5, he was 5 of 6. He's been scalding hot. He is also playing well overall. 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks for Ilyasova. He was a +2. And just generally played quite well in 31 minutes. Torian Prince, another sort of back-to-back good game here for Torian. 17 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. Defensively, I'm not sure if it was any better, or even as good as he was on Saturday, but certainly not a bad performance defensively and offensively. More prolific here, had the ball in his hands more often, and led the entire game in minutes with 39 minutes played, more than anybody, including Porzingis on the Knicks side. And Torian played quite well here. Miles Plumlee had a bunch of dunks in this game, a couple of highlight reel ones, 9 points, 5 rebounds in 16 minutes. That was basically all of the positive contributions for Miles. There were some things that he did not do particularly well, but did make up for that with some strong finishes. We mentioned Schroeder. His overall performance is sort of interesting. Offensively, I thought he was fine. Defensively, not so much. Kent Bazemore, 9 points, 4 assists, and 2 rebounds in 28 minutes. Certainly a step back from Kent from what he was on Saturday, but that's not a huge indictment of his play. I don't think he was great here, nor was he terrible, obviously. Marco Bellinelli had 13 points, was 0 of 6 from 3, though, was 2 of 9 from the floor, made all 9 of his free throws, including one big foul that he drew late that actually went to the line and made all 3. He's such a good free throw shooter, that's very valuable, but in general, I don't think he was particularly great here. Bembry was sort of a no-show, to be honest with you. No points, no rebounds, no assists. It was -16 in 16 minutes. I'm not sure he was that bad, but not the greatest game for your DeAndre Bembry highlight reel. I'm a huge fan of his game. This is not his crowning moment, to be sure. Luke Babbitt had a better game here. 9 points, 3 rebounds, 21 minutes. Made a couple of shots, a couple of threes. Again, he was just okay as well, but a nice bounce back from him offensively, at least. And Tyler Cavanaugh, 7 points, 6 rebounds, had 5 fouls, had some foul issues, to be sure. Not as many as Michael Beasley from the Knicks, who fouled out in only 10 minutes of play. That's a landmark occasion, absolutely, for the opponent. We don't spend a whole lot of time on those guys, but that was one you want to file away for your NBA database, for sure. Lastly, at the backup point guard job, we talked a little bit, of course, earlier about Schroeder, and you heard Bud mention that both Delaney and Taylor played in this game. It was Taylor It was Taylor in the first stint. He really, really struggled in the first half when he first came into the game. For the entire night, 17 minutes, 2 points, 1 of 5 from the floor, had three rebounds and 2 assists and a steal. A lot of that play was in the fourth quarter, as he was the one that was closing in crunch time for the Hawks. But I will say, originally, when Delaney came in the second quarter, I thought it was probably because Taylor had just come out. Dennis came in, got a quick foul, and I guess Bud didn't want to go back to Taylor. But then he brought Delaney back in the third quarter. You know, part of that's probably because the Hawks were playing well with Delaney on the court in the second quarter. He was actually, I think, +8 or +9 in that stretch that he played in the second. But, you know, from there, Delaney wasn't quite as good in the second half. His numbers did not look fantastic at all. 0-2 from the floor, had 2 assists. That was basically the rest of his stat line was dead even in terms of plus minus in 8 minutes. It's sort of interesting to see him dust it off a little bit here. I'm obviously a bigger fan of Delaney than most people, but you know, Taylor is a better player in terms of what the Hawks want from that spot right now as a pure point guard, and we saw him go back to him. But I thought it was at least noteworthy that Delaney was brought in for the first time in quite some time in terms of an actual competitive situation as a pure point guard option. We've not seen that in quite some time from Malcolm, and he was okay in his stint. But yeah, you know, a lot of this was just Schroeder getting benched. That's the headliner for sure. And I'm not sure it's going to, you know, continue. You know, I think it was Kale Schnarr that mentioned this first that I saw on Twitter, is that this is not the first time by any stretch of the imagination that Budenholzer has benched his starting point guard late in the game. You know, Dennis has been benched before. It happened a couple times last year with Malcolm Delaney playing crunch time minutes. Before that, Jeff Teague got benched in favor of Schroeder a few times in previous seasons. So this is not the first time, nor the last probably, that we'll see Budenholzer take some action against Schroeder. With that said, you know, he's the leading scorer and becomes more of a feature this year because he is that guy that has the ball in his hands at the end of games. And I'm sure people will point to the fact that, you know, if Schroeder had played, the Hawks might have won this game. I'm not sure I agree with that, but you know, this again, I'll wrap this up by saying I would estimate this is definitely a message being sent by Budenholzer in his direction, and we'll see how Dennis responds in the next game on Tuesday. So we'll have about 48 hours or so in between contests, see how Dennis feels, and maybe some comments on Monday as well, and get some travel days. You'll follow social media, all that fun stuff, and we'll see if anything pops up along the way. So there it was, a split of a weekend for the Hawks, a 1-1 split. I think they'll probably take that more times than not with this current collection of talent. They won the game they were supposed to win when they were 4.5-point favorite on Saturday. They lost as a 5-point underdog. Ended up covering the spread, if that's a small consolation prize on Sunday, but a 1-1 performance, and now a couple of challenging games here, both on the road in Cleveland and at home again for Detroit. So we'll be here throughout the week. As always, I would encourage you guys again to subscribe to the podcast if you've not done that already. Start your week off with us positive, in a positive way on this fine Monday, is that we have now crossed over into midnight as I'm recording this. So I appreciate you guys listening as always, and please let me know if there's anything I could do to strengthen the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Hawks. Follow us on Facebook at Locked On Hawks, and email as well, lockedonhawks@gmail.com. Reach out to us for anything you guys might need, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.